So here's a question for you to answer if you'd like, or just to think about if you'd like. What are things that you hope for? What are things that people hope for or want to get out of their lives? What are you really hoping for your life to be? What do people really want to get out of their lives, to become of their lives? Any thoughts? Not one. I know you're thinking. I'm sure there are a zillion answers to that question. You know, maybe we want love, or maybe we want meaning, maybe we want accomplishment, family, who knows? So many things that we hope for. And it's in that spirit that we come to this book of Ruth, because this book really is our story. It's about people doing their best to make a life and trusting God with wherever it takes them. The book of Ruth is right after the book of Judges, right before 1 Samuel begins. It's a beautiful Hebrew short story, what they call a novella. And we don't know who wrote it, but whoever wrote it was very skilled. Some think that it was Samuel, but we don't know. We know that it was written in the time of Judges. Verse 1 says, in the days when the judges ruled, that's how the book begins. And Judges, you may remember, was a dark time for Israel. It was a time when they would stray away from God. They would be conquered by some group around them, some people. God would raise up a judge to lead them, to deliver them. They would be delivered. They would stray away from God again. They would be conquered again. God would raise up a judge to deliver them. You get the idea. This was a repeating cycle of the book of Judges. And at the very end of the last verse of Judges, 21 verse 25, I think is a fitting description. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. Everyone did what they saw fit. They weren't listening to or following the word of God. And so the book of Ruth is a bright spot, literally in between the judges and the beginning of the kingship that were to come. So it's a bright spot of faith in a very dark time. And it also gives us the story of King David's ancestors and where he comes from. But let's get into the story. And in the first number of verses, we learn that there's a famine in Israel, and it causes Elimelech to immigrate with his wife and his sons from Bethlehem, where they live, to Moab. And this was just so that they could survive. We don't know all the reasons why, but we know that the famine caused them to move. And if we can see the map, you can see Bethlehem over here. How's that pointer, huh? All right. And so in those days, that was probably about a week's worth of a trip. There weren't hotel sixes or anything like that, so it was not an easy trip. But they were willing to make that trip down to Moab. We don't know where in Moab they went in order to make a life. Choices that people make. And, you know, immigration is so much in the news today. We just have to realize that immigration like this has happened through history. People trying to make a life, trying to take their families to a place where they can survive. And this is one of those stories. Was it a good decision? Well, probably not a great decision, as we will see. Moabites were descendants of Lot, Abraham's nephew. They were at peace with Israel at this time, obviously, for Israelites to travel to Moab, but there were times when they were at war, but this time they were not. Elimelech dies, and his sons marry Moabite woman, Orpah. I keep wanting to say Oprah, but that's not right. Orpah and Ruth. In the law, marrying Moabite women was not forbidden. But if you did, you had to recognize that what was forbidden is that they were not welcomed in the congregation of the people of Israel. So they were not able to worship. or in their perspective, have access to God. Now, the story goes on to say that either 10 years later or a total of 10 years, we're not really sure, the sons die. Elimelech dies. Now, within 10 years, the sons have passed away. And here is Naomi stranded in Moab with just daughters-in-law. Now, what now? What do you do if you're Naomi? They were widows. They had no sons, which was a double curse from their perspective. That in our culture, they would be accustomed to being homeless people because they could not own land. They had no place to live. They had no way to earn a living. So this was basically a death wish. Your life is over. And Naomi, her only chance is to return home, because perhaps her people would provide for her. She hears the famine is over in Israel, and so she begins to head back home to do that journey all over again as three women, which you can imagine was not a very safe trip at all. Now, on the way, it occurs to her that what's best for her daughters-in-law is to be with their families, with their people, worshiping their God. And so she stops. We don't know how far they got, but she thinks that this is best for them. She tells them to go home, blesses them, asking Yahweh to show them kindness. Verse 8, Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness to you as you have shown your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." So she's doing the best she can do. She's doing what she thinks is best for her and for them. And they protest, of course. They say, no, we're not going. We're going to stay with you. And then Naomi goes into this description that is called levirate marriage. And the law was in Israel that if a man died, his brother would marry the widow in order to carry on the name and the inheritance. And so what Naomi goes on to say is that, look, I'm too old to marry. Even if I married today and was pregnant today, would you marry that child if it is a boy one day? No, it's not going to work. There's no way for me to provide a husband for you, as the law demands. And Naomi also knows that the prospects of marriage for these two foreign women in Bethlehem were zilch. No one is going to marry them. And so you can really see that her best is, I'm going back to my people, you need to go back to your people, and that's what will be best. And so Orpah makes the obvious choice. Verse 14, at this they wept again, then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. So you can see how this is our story, right? Life is a series of decisions that we make, doing our best with every circumstance, with every choice, to do what's best for us and for the people around us, whether it's choosing a college, choosing a spouse, what job we're going to work in, where we're going to live, what activities our children are going to be involved in. We're constantly making these choices, these decisions, trusting God that this is going to be best, I hope. A couple weeks ago, we were in North Carolina, and even more ancient history, we had planted a church there in Cary, North Carolina, outside of Raleigh. And the church actually just recently closed. And so we were meeting with some of our friends there and talking about the church plan and talking about how it came to the point of closing. And at the time, we left for reasons we thought were best and returned to California. But you can't help but wonder, and maybe you do too, when you think back on some of the decisions you made, was that really the best? What would have happened if I would have made a different choice? But this is life, right? This is how it goes, and this is what Ruth and Naomi are doing. So Ruth makes a choice as well, what she thinks is best. She clings to Naomi in spite of her pleading and makes an astounding commitment. And I want to read this, verse 16, it's up here. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." Now let that sink in. It's an astounding commitment for her to make, though she has no obligation at all. "I'm going to go with you wherever you go. I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to live with you. I'm going to make your people my people. Your God is going to be the one I worship. I'm going to die where you die. I'm going to be buried where you're buried. And if anything except death separates us, may the Lord punish me." Have you ever made a commitment like that? Whoa, baby, right? I mean, she just lays it all out there. Think about what she could, okay, I'll go with you, right? She could have said that. No, I'm going to go with you. We'll see how it goes. Nope. "Until death, I will be with you. I will commit myself to you until then." So they make the dangerous week-long trip back to Bethlehem. The town is stirred up that Naomi is back and home. And what she tells them is, oh, Naomi's back. And she says, no, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara, which means bitter. Because the Lord has made me bitter with no future. And the sense there is that God is punishing her. And we don't know why, but maybe she thinks that the whole trip, the whole decision to go to Moab was not in God's will, and he has punished her. She left over 10 years ago, full. She returns empty, no husband or sons. And she says, because the Lord stood against me. And they arrive as the barley harvest begins, pointing to what's ahead. Now, this could be our story, right? Trying to make a life, doing what we think is best through difficulty and challenges and even tragedy. But what's striking here is that through these women, especially Ruth, we see how God provides for the life that we seek, that provides the best life for us, and that is that God created us to thrive in community with his people. God created us to thrive in community with his people. Naomi returns to God and her people. Ruth commits herself to Naomi and to her people, and to her God. You see, they were a package deal. If you committed yourself to someone, you committed to all of them, their people, their families, their God. And one of the themes of the book of Ruth is God's covenant love, a Hebrew word, chesed, which means faithful or loving kindness or loyal love. And we see this covenant love, this promised love, throughout this book, but especially we see it in Ruth here, because she promises her love to Naomi, which is what God has done for his people. And we'll see in the story, as we go on, we'll see other people who demonstrate this kind of loyal covenant love for others. A covenant love that promises, I'm committed to you for life. As we know, Israel's devotion was to God and his people. Jesus summarized this in the greatest commandment. Remember when he was asked, what's the greatest commandment? Well, he squeezes in two. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. They go together. You can't separate those. Love God and love the community. That's what you're called to do. The Apostle Paul expanded this corporate mindset by calling us the members of Christ's body, the members of his family, the members of his church, and church literally means assembly. It's just an assembly. So we're the community of people, And we were created for relationship, and therefore, God created us to thrive in community. And this is what we see his people doing. And this foreigner, which is so surprising, Ruth, committing herself to the community. And the story is going to show us how she thrives as a result of that. I came across this, Dallas Willard, one of my favorite authors, said this: human fulfillment comes through community in which there is trust and truth. Human fulfillment comes through community in which there is trust and truth. And he says a lot more about that, but just how our lives are fulfilled and added to and built up by the community around us. I came across something this week that I've never heard of before, and it's called Moai. Ever heard of it? I hadn't either. But it comes out of these studies of these blue areas of the world where people have great longevity. One of those places is Okinawa. And so people, the average age, people reach the average age in the upper 90s. It's crazy. And so people have gone there to study, why do people live so long here? Part of it is their diet. So, of course, eating a certain way helps. But one of the reasons they attribute to the longevity of the Okinawans is what they call moai. And in Japanese, it means, I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation, so don't think that's right. But it's right because I just said it that way. But it means meeting for a common purpose in Japanese. Now, what they do is children are put into small groups of 5 to 10 kids. And they're matched by kind of life experience, kind of upbringing, kind of family. And that group stays together for life. Now, think about that. As children, they're formed into groups, and that group stays together for life. And so this is a picture of a moai of women who have spent their entire lives walking together through everything life brings. And so what the researchers have found is this kind of community support brings vitality to life, exactly what God has told us from the beginning. That we were created for community and to thrive in community. But I don't think we believe that. I don't think we believe that community is essential to our well-being. And I think we are taught, in a sense, to believe that we thrive as individuals, that we are self-sufficient. We commit ourselves and our kids to things we think are best for the good life, with jobs and activities and schools and all those things. But since our best life comes through independence and doing what we want to do, community is a low priority, which means we won't have time for it because we put so many other things in front of it. I was in Meijer this week, and I was in the dairy section, and there were these two women talking there, and you sorry, I was listening to what they were saying. And it was almost like they were. I can do better than that with how crazy their schedules were with their kids. Oh, we've got soccer, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, we've got band and blah, blah, blah. Oh, what we have that, you know, and it's almost like they were going back and forth. I can top you with how crazy my life is. And that's kind of normal, right? We have so many activities. We're so busy doing things that we hardly have time for relationships. Though relationship is part of the activities. But if we're committed to, even if we're committed to a church or a ministry, it's often to an activity or an event, not a specific group of people to share life with. And if we made a movie of this book, it would be about Naomi, the strong, independent woman who makes it herself. Right? That's what we value. That's what the movies that we watch are all about. But it's killing us. I mean, why do Americans who have all the opportunity and all the wealth and education struggle so much with depression and suicide? That makes no sense, does it? I read another study this week by Sigma, and It was a very large study, and what they came to conclude was almost half of the United States, people in the United States, would call themselves lonely. Half the country? And they use a scale that determines how they come up with that from UCLA. But the president of the company concluded this: we're seeing a lack of human connection ultimately leads to a lack of vitality, or a disconnect between mind and body. Now, all they're reflecting back to us is what? God told us that. God said, if you want to thrive, if you want the best life, you've got to commit yourself to community. Because that's where you're created to thrive, not as an individual. So since God created us to thrive in community, and we live in this independent, individual, self-sufficient kind of society, what can we do to thrive as the Lord intends? Well, it's simply committing ourselves to community and trusting God with where it takes us. That's what I love about this story. Ruth is under no obligation to Naomi, but she obligates herself to Naomi. And what's in it for her? She could go back to her family. She could go back to her community of support and friends and the hope of being married. There's nothing in this commitment for her. Last week in 1 John, Brad was talking about God's economy of love, and this love is what rises up in Ruth to commit herself to Naomi, to her God, and to her people. Like I said, there's nothing in this commitment for Ruth except an uncertain and difficult future. Why would you do that then? Because that's what love does. It commits itself to another. My daughter just recently got married to Lee Dunn. Wonderful celebration and time of making a covenant out of their love for each other. But having been married almost 35 years, I can't help but think, I wonder where this is going to take you. It's not going to take you where you think it's taking you. Trust me on that one. No, I didn't say that, but... That was my meditation for the wedding, no. But you can't help wonder that you, how crazy, you make this commitment to each other with no idea where it's going and what that's going to mean for you. But that's what love does, right? It says, I'm committed to you, and I'll trust God with where this takes us. And I think we're so conditioned by our independent culture, we can't see that love breeds commitment. It has to. And so we see church and we see community as something that's based on what we think is best for us. But what does it mean to love others as Christ loves us? One thing that it means is that we commit ourselves to each other, because that's what Christ did for us, right? Paul speaks to this. Is the verse up there? Next one. Yep. Oh, next. Nope, that's not it. Try again. Okay, I'll just read it. Romans 12, verse 10. Paul writes this: be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Brotherly love is family love. It's the word Philadelphia that we're familiar with. But how do we love? Love must be sincere, he says. How do we love? Devote yourselves to each other. That's what love does. And as Brad said, love is more of a choice, a commitment, than a feeling. It's choosing to do what's best for the other, because that's who God is. He committed himself to us knowing it would lead him to the cross, knowing what it would cost him. And praise God, he committed himself to us like that. He devoted himself to us. Think with me, what would it be like if everyone in this room committed themselves to each other, to have each other's back? What would it look like on Sunday mornings if we were devoted to each other in this way when we gather? What would it look like if we committed ourselves to sharing life together by meeting regularly for support and encouragement? What would it look like if we committed ourselves to helping each other become all that God created us to be? You know, the city outreach team is working through all the questionnaires you responded to. And we were just overwhelmed with the gifts and abilities and talents and passions and joys that God has put in you. And we just keep coming back over and over to the fact of what potential there is among the people of God at Riverside if we can only develop and help each of us express and become who God made us to be. What would it look like if we committed ourselves to being there for each other in hard times, whatever it took? All of us. What would it look like if Christ's body became the priority of our lives upon which all else rested? I think it would look like the church Jesus gave birth to. That's what it would look like. Because that's what we see in Acts chapter 2, verse 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer, that their love for each other bred devotion to each other. I know this is what our Lord has in mind for Riverside, so we can truly become a family on mission. That's the only way it'll happen. And so what step of commitment can we make? How can we express the love of Christ in our devotion to one another? I think most of you know that membership is Riverside's way of saying, I'm committed, I'm in, I'm committed to you, I'm with you. But what does that look like for you? Is membership something, a step of commitment, a step of love? Can we see it that way? Going through Riverside 101 to learn more about the church, to prepare us to commit ourselves to the community? How about pods? Pods are the place where this life takes place. It's the place where we can be devoted to a specific group of people and share life with them and meet with them regularly for support. What would those pods be like if we made the commitment Ruth made? I'm with you to death. Where you go, I go. Where you, your God is my God, your people, my people, I'm with you. We have huddles going, our discipleship groups, another place where we can make a commitment to each other. As Katrina said, what do you hear the Spirit saying to you, to us? Let's just take a moment of silence to listen, to reflect on God's word to us, and then we'll pray. Lord, this morning we marvel at the love that Ruth expressed to Naomi. We marvel that that is the love you have for us, that you have committed yourself to us. You are devoted to us. And Lord, our prayer this morning is that you would teach us how to love each other in this way that you love us, so that people can see your love among us, your kingdom on earth.